But as always, let's begin the Tuesday program, get the local angle. It's been quite a week. He's the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Catch what he's up to in the sports section of the newspaper. Online, registerguard.com, ducksports.com, at Austin Meek on Twitter. Austin, how's it going?
Hey, Steve, I'm good. How are you doing?
All right. How was holiday here in town with the family?
The holiday was great. We had a little family in town, and we didn't do a whole lot. Enjoyed a day on the couch Thursday and back to work Friday at the Civil War, so it was good.
Do you have any Meek family traditions, be it like ham over turkey, Bloody Marys with Thanksgiving breakfast, or are you more kind of traditional down the line?
You know what? We're pretty conventional. We're the meat and potatoes, turkey, stuffing. We're from the Midwest, so we do the green bean casserole. But aside from that, most of our stuff is pretty traditional.
All right. I probably would have bet on that. I want to start with today. You wrote about handing out the awards in this conference. And I'm sure in years gone by, you probably had to think long and hard, go back over the year, maybe look at certain games. In picking Coach of the Year and Player of the Year, I'm setting the over-under on 38 seconds. Mike Leach and Gardner Minshew, would I be accurate there?
Yeah, I didn't have to think too hard about either one of those. In terms of Coach of the Year, you know, there were some other guys that I would have thought about. Justin Wilcox has a nice case for that. Herm Edwards has a nice case for that based on how Arizona State finished up and the expectations for them in the preseason. But clearly to me, Washington State was the best story of this football season in the Pac-12. And as I put in the column, really the only reason that anybody outside the West Coast had a reason to pay attention to the Pac-12 in November was Washington State. Everybody else was basically irrelevant. So even though it didn't end up being the dream season that Washington State had hoped, it ended with another loss to Chris Peterson in the Apple Cup. Still, to go 10-2 in a year when Washington State was picked fifth in the North and with all the turmoil they had, I think clearly Leach is the Coach of the Year and Minshew is the Player of the Year for me.
No, I think it was the right calls. And you also picked who's on the hot seat next year. And it's kind of interesting because this conference, five teams with new coaches, Utah and Washington won their division with experienced coaches. David Shaw is solid. You mentioned Wilcox got better at Cal. Mike McIntyre's not on the hot seat. He's out. So I'd imagine Clay Helton of USC was almost by default the guy who's in the most warm water next year.
Yeah, and clearly he is going to be on the hot seat. Yeah. And that's going to be a storyline all next season is Clay Helton watch, because from what I can tell, Lynn Swann's decision to retain him has not gone over very well with the Trojan fans, who are not happy about a 5-7 season. He's apparently cleaned house today, and so all those things set up for one of those seasons where it's just kind of like dead man walking. You know, what's he going to have to do next year to get off the hot seat? I'm not sure there's much he can do short of winning the Pac-12 and making the playoff that will sort of turn the tide with the Trojan fans. But if not for Clay Helton, and when I was thinking about this column at the time, I thought Clay Helton was going to get fired. And I was thinking, you know what, there's nobody that's going to be on the hot seat next year, because everybody else, like you said, is either established, entrenched coach who is not one bad year away from getting fired, or else a coach who's pretty new on the job and still has enough goodwill that they're going to have a chance to keep building their program.
As for the Civil War on Friday, talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, it was a great win. It was convincing. They got out quickly. They won on the road. Two backs ran for 180 yards. All great. But I feel like you need to temper it a little bit, because Oregon State's run defense allows 282 yards a game. I went back 5 years. Only UCLA at the Power 5 level has not even given up more. It was the same. So while, yeah, all well and good, do you have to kind of be like, yeah, but that defense they faced is brutal?
You know, that's a great stat. I hadn't heard that stat, but that's a really good one. And it certainly matches the eye test watching that game, because Oregon State was absolutely powerless to stop the run. They had no chance to stop the run. And that's what Oregon wants to do. So that was, you know, that was nirvana for Mario Cristobal. He loves that kind of game, if you can just pound it down the other team's throats. Not that I would ever suggest that anybody at Oregon was remotely happy about Justin Herbert not being able to play in the second half, because they weren't. But I think Mario Cristobal probably deep down enjoyed having an excuse to run the ball on like 35 out of 37 plays in the second half. I'm sure that part of it he probably enjoyed, because that's exactly how he wants to play.
Did you happen to see John Canzano's tweet after that first drive where I think they ran it 9 times and he went, run, 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 touchdown, somebody get Mario Cristobal a cigarette?
I did see that. That was a good line. Yeah, that's Mario. Mario Cristobal was a happy, happy man after a drive like that.
You know, there's a lot of talk in recent weeks about what will happen with Justin Herbert. You know, his brother's coming here. Perhaps he would, in fact, forego, you know, tens of millions and return to school. Then he gets hurt in the last game of the regular season. You wrote about it on Friday. A more likely time to get ready for the next Duck starting quarterback, or Duck fans, hold your ears, maybe he doesn't even play in the bowl game? I know it's all speculation, but what's your gut telling you?
Yeah. Well, look, I think everybody, when Justin Herbert had to leave that game and you saw him reaching to grab at his collarbone or his shoulder, I think everybody's mind probably went to the worst-case scenario, thinking, oh, did he re-injure the collarbone that he fractured last year? And it does not appear that that is the case. It doesn't seem like anybody's real concerned about the injury to the shoulder. From what I hear, he's going to be good to go. So in terms of that aspect of it, I don't think that that injury is going to end up being a big part of the calculation, other than the fact that anytime you're a quarterback, a player who's projected to be a first-round draft pick, and you have any kind of injury, I think it's got to make you think, you know, what could happen if I come back? And next time, maybe it's not a minor injury. Next time, maybe it's a more severe injury. You know, players always have to make that calculation. What is the risk of coming back if I were to get hurt? My gut feeling all along has been that there's a really good chance that Justin Herbert comes back. And I still think there's a really good chance that Justin Herbert comes back. I also think that either way, in the run-up to this bowl game, Oregon should be trying to figure out what they have on deck at quarterback. They need to figure out what they have in Tyler Shuck, because whether Justin Herbert declares for the draft this year or plays another year and graduates, Oregon's going to have somebody ready to replace him. And as Oregon learned, I think, from the Mariota years, is that if you have a great quarterback and you don't have a clear succession plan after he leaves, then it's really easy to get exposed.
You know, I was thinking that if he left, the coaches would be in a position to kind of tip their hand, because if they were true believers in either Tyler Shuck, the freshman, or Braxton Burmeister, the sophomore, they wouldn't look outside. But do you get a feeling if Herbert left that we'd learn quickly, if they brought in like a grad transfer, that what they've been saying is kind of like more hopeful than they actually believe they have the next Duck quarterback already on the roster?
Yeah, if I had to place a bet, if Justin Herbert leaves, I would bet that next year's game one starter is not on the roster right now. It would be somebody that they would bring in, like you said, as a grad transfer. You know, we've seen Braxton Burmeister now start 5 games last year and play a half this year, and just haven't seen it with him, you know, that he can throw the ball at the level you have to throw it to be a Pac-12 caliber starting quarterback. Tyler Shuck, we don't really know. I think it's a little bit telling that, you know, when Mario Cristobal had to put in a backup quarterback against Oregon State, it was Burmeister. He trusted Burmeister to handle the ball in that situation. Doesn't mean that Tyler Shuck can't turn out to be a Pac-12 caliber starting quarterback, but we just don't know. So I had to guess, if Oregon's starting quarterback is not Justin Herbert next year, then it's probably a guy who is not on the roster at this moment.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. Another issue to put on the Oregon fan holiday concern list might be the departure of one of the coordinators. I'm going to focus on Leavitt because with Marcus Arroyo, this is actually the biggest job he's held, and Leavitt's made it clear he wants to be a head coach again. Is it logical to think a guy like him, whose head coaching career has never been at the Power 5 level, may be more in line for a Colorado, Kansas State, what I would call a more middle to lower Pac-5 program, as opposed to a more substantial upgrade?
Yeah, I think Jim Leavitt really wants to be head coach, and I don't know that he's going to be in a position to be real picky about where that is. Not that he won't have some options, but look, USC and Michigan are not lining up to hire Jim Leavitt. Look, he's got some baggage. His departure from South Florida, his firing at South Florida, that has followed him through his career, and that's something that any school that hires him as a head coach is going to have to really explain. When he was an assistant coach, certainly it was discussed, but Oregon, Colorado, they weren't forced to really account for, what happened to Jim Leavitt at South Florida with the player that he allegedly struck. But that's going to happen if he gets a head coaching job. I don't know that will preclude him from getting one, but it may mean that, like you said, he's not necessarily having his pick of just any job that he wants. The interesting job that's out there now is he's been mentioned as a candidate at Texas Tech.
Right.
And he has a connection with Kirby Hoka, who's the athletic director at Texas Tech, back from their K-State days. So that would be a really interesting move. Texas Tech has been the school known for offense, along with Oregon, one of the schools that is known for having really prolific offenses every year. Well, they fired Cliff Kingsbury, who's the air raid guru from the Mike Leach days. Would they bring in a defensive coach at Texas Tech? Would that be a good fit? I don't know, but it does sound like there's some interest there based on the connection with Leavitt and Kirby Hoka.
Yeah, we'll see what happens between now and bowl time. A couple final thoughts for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. You wrote a piece about the retirement of Oregon team doctor Don Jones, I think 40 seasons. And, in a crazy violent game like this, he's worked on just so many players. But I thought one of the interesting aspects, so he's from Shreveport. He's a Louisiana guy. So his first trip to Eugene was not to interview for the job, but to get healed himself?
Yeah, kind of an interesting backstory how that happened. So Don Jones has been the team physician for the Oregon football team for 35-some-odd years, a long time. And, yeah, he's originally from Louisiana, and it was actually a knee injury of his own that led him to come out here for the first time because Don Slocum, who's you'll recognize the Slocum name from Slocum Orthopedics, was a pioneering orthopedist in sports medicine, and in particular worked with the Oregon teams back when sports medicine was not nearly as understood as it is today. So he was known kind of nationally as being the guy that you would come see to get your knee reconstructed if you'd had a sports injury. So Don Jones had actually had that injury in high school, and had never had his knee repaired, and so when he was going through his residency, one of his supervisors said, "Hey, you need to go to Eugene and see this Dr. Slocum to get your knee fixed." And he came out here and had his knee repaired and realized, boy, they're doing something kind of cool out here with sports medicine. So fast forward, 40 years later, he's had a great run as the team surgeon and team physician for the Oregon football team. As you said, has probably seen a lot of gruesome injuries that would make our stomachs turn, but he's a professional, part of his job, and has helped keep the Ducks on their feet for a long time.
No pun intended. Let's finish with what the heck happened last night at Matt Knight Arena. The Duck men lose to Texas Southern out of the Southwestern Athletic Conference, and many talk about they play a challenging schedule. They beat Baylor, took on Gonzaga and Iowa State. But, Peyton Pritchard came out and said it, and there's no way around it. This is one of the worst losses of the Altman era. Kind of there are just some ongoing issues that have not disappeared, and I know it's early.
I would say it's the worst loss of the Altman era. especially when you consider where this team is relative to some of his previous teams. You know, early on in his tenure, he had some losses to teams sort of in the same category as Texas Southern, but you know, those early Altman teams weren't supposed to be any good, and this team was picked to win the Pac-12. So I would say losing at home to Texas Southern is the worst loss of the Dana Altman era. Boy, I don't know where you start. I guess I would say, you know, the first, all but the last 2 minutes of that game, that's a game I've seen before at Matthew Knight Arena, if that makes sense. You know, it's not uncommon for one or two nights out of the year, you're playing at home against some mid-major team, low-major team, whatever. You don't bring it for the first part of the game, and then you get to the last 2 minutes, you're in a close game, you put the pedal down, and you pull away, and you win by 10. I've seen that game a dozen times, but that wasn't what happened. The really surprising part of that game was it got down to crunch time. It was close, and you thought, okay, here's where Oregon gets serious. They put their foot down. They pull away, and they win this game. But it was totally the other way around. Texas Southern looked like the team that had all the confidence, that knew what it wanted to do, that executed down the stretch. Oregon looked like the team that was rattled, that was playing desperate, that didn't know what they wanted to do. That was the really surprising part about that game. And, you know, I asked Dana Altman afterwards, like, does this feel like, you know, just kind of November growing pains, like what your teams have gone through in the past? And he said, no, it feels different. And it felt different to me because of what, you know, what I just said. In years past, Oregon would find a way to win that game. And the fact that they didn't do that makes me think this particular team has some issues that maybe are bigger than other Altman teams have had at this point.
Yeah, a lot of questions, new faces, and we'll see how they bounce back. They're at Houston Saturday. Folks, he is Austin Meek of the Register Guard, online registerguard.com, ducksports.com as well. On Twitter, the handle is at Austin Meek RG. Always appreciate the time, Austin. Great talking to you, and we'll catch up next week.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Looking forward to it.
All right, take it easy.